us begin with the roll call, please?
Gary Ehrenberg, Roseanne Benson, Bob Kriz.
Here.
Tim Kusick.
Here.
Mark Holly.
Here.
Eric Karsh. Irv Logan. Angelica Mueller. Maria Nickerson. Bobette Patton. Linda Sharp Taylor. Eric Stein.
Here.
Todd Thompson.
Here.
John Thiemann.
Here.
Michael Warford. Rosalind Williams.
A quorum being present, let us continue with the minutes from the next meeting, last meeting, excuse me. Is there anybody who would like a reading of the minutes? Is there anybody who would suggest corrections or amendments, so to speak, to the minutes of the last meeting? Would somebody make a motion to approve the minutes from the last meeting?
I'll make a motion.
And second, please.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
We come to, as a no, okay. We come to now to what is really the heart of tonight's meeting, and that is subcommittee reports and status updates. I suppose we'll just, I'll rather arbitrarily call for various committee, subcommittee updates. How about the Committee on Neighboring Community? Is this one of the things that Eric sent in as a summary?
No, the standing committees are on the bottom of one of the handouts I put on the paper desks there. Neighboring community data, and the members of the committee are listed there. Survey subcommittee, stormwater ordinances, identifying stormwater sources and prioritization methods, early warning, and funding. Eric summarized and distributed to the Dropbox the funding the neighboring communities and identifying sources of prioritization. Would you like me to summarize what he sent in?
It would probably be appropriate.
Okay. For the subcommittee on funding, members of that committee are Eric Karsh, Tim Kusick, Gary Ehrenberg. Would I steal your thunder if I summarize this?
Go right ahead.
Okay. Eric was kind enough to prepare a summary, and this is his summary. There's $200,000 in stormwater management activities in the fiscal 19 budget. The consensus in that committee was favoring options 2 and 3 in the stormwater master plan. I'm not sure if that belongs here because this is okay. Yeah, maybe it did. Funding needed for options 2 and 3, Eric identified, is for the buyout plan adopted, proposed by the core permit. Action item was to discuss whether the core updates, the action items that the committee identified was there was a summary presented to the city council on October 22nd. Otherwise, the committee's been on hold pending. pending other work. Subcommittee on Neighboring Communities. Which was Tim Bobette, Angelica Mueller, Eric Karsh, John Tiemann. Any of those want to report, or do you want me to read Eric's summary?
You seem to be on a roll.
All right. Eric listed one action item, which was brought up on the August meeting. Review the I'm having trouble deciphering his notes here. There was a summary presented in August of the neighboring communities' codes and practices. I presume that information was brought forward to the Committee on Ordinances. The identifying stormwater sources and prioritization, that committee met early on. I was part of that committee, and work has been put on hold until the survey was in and more data was obtained. So that's that report. Survey committee, Mark, you want to add anything from the survey committee?
I can, just to have a different voice on the air there. I put this summary together of, and it's not much different than what we had before. However, I did add some observations at the bottom of each of the charts. So we started out and put the survey link in Roars back in, I think it was March, and we got the results in April at any rate, which I plotted up using a mapping routine. If you look at, you know, how some of the respondents are mapped, they do tend to a lot of grouping around our known source of problems being river to pair, but then you see some groupings that look kind of out in the wilderness there. So they suggest areas, you know, as we get a more comprehensive list with our final set of data, it might suggest that we do on-site looking at those areas and seeing what we can divine from that. I also looked at the MSD data that Paulette had provided earlier and superposed those together. And it's, you know, it's a little bit unclear. We can delve down into those actual addresses a little bit later on when we get a comprehensive list to see how much overlap there is, but it does tend to fall along the same areas. So there may be some redundant reporting between our survey and what MSD already had for complaints. Or it may suggest that they're getting some repetitive problems even though MSD knows about it. Particularly the locations with problems more than once a year, yeah, there do seem to be some groups of maybe, you know, seven or eight houses in specific locations there. So again, my intent would be, after we see a little bit more comprehensive list, to go out and actually spend some time in those areas and see, you know, is it the topology, or if you knock on some doors and things like that, then you might see they've got real problems with their sewer line or something like that in that area that hasn't been addressed. And likewise, erosion that was reported is along River to Pear. and different modalities for the way that water gets into homes. So my suggestions were, in the future, we'll get our survey results, and we can drill a little bit more detail down into those addresses and things, and try to understand what those residents are experiencing. Probably actually go down and look at the channel in the areas, particularly where there's a lot of repetitive water for the river to pair. And I think with that grouping insight, that might give us some insight into how to prioritize what problems are. So that's kind of what that says.
Thank you. Please.
Mark, does any of this data include the recent surveys that were sent out? Has any of that data been included in the
shed? We haven't gotten any of that back yet, so I don't know whether anything's been mailed in to... That was in the last drawers, correct?
And yes.
Yeah, so that's for November, December. So as of today, we had 116 surveys that came in. So,
oh wow,
including the information that you have.
Yeah, and we'll be able to see whether people are reporting more than once too when we get back then, yeah, and see the address data.
So it's a roughly 2% of the households in the city that have responded.
Hopefully, if there's no overlap in those, then we'll be upping our data a little bit.
Hmm. Is there any sort of kind of preliminary sense of what they look like?
I haven't looked at any of them.
Stormwater ordinances, that was Tim Kusick, Bob Kriz, and John Tiemann. Do you want to add anything?
I think it is largely available for reading on the Dropbox. It is a bit much to summarize. We've actually summarized it actually a couple of times in these meetings, so there's no need to be redundant. I would just simply suggest, if you want to take a look at it in depth, to go in and we started off with almost 40 pages of draft ordinance and got it down to what we have, three main pages, I believe, now. Which was quite an effort. And I really shouldn't be the one summarizing it. I really have to hand it to Councilman Lusick and Eric.
Bob, the one that over there, helped us realize what we need to chop out. So.
Yeah.
So it was a team effort.
Well, thank you for including me in the team. But these are the real pros. In any case, but I would suggest, if you really want to see it in depth, to go in and take a look at it on the... Dropbox.
Next one that we had discussed was early warning. Mm-hmm. Do you want to say anything, Eric?
I guess about three points here. First of all, the report that we submitted back in April is still current, I guess, with one significant upgrade. In that report, we talked about the need for adequate number of rain gauges and made several suggestions about where we might find them. Since then, I think as we reported in the October meeting, I think it was, we discovered that there are several MSD gauges in operation in the basin. And we contacted MSD, and they have given us access to that data online via their Telog site. So we can see both current and historical rain gauge information. Gauges report every 5 minutes during heavy rainfall. So that's pretty close to what you need for input to a warning system. It looks like the historical data that they gave us as part of that doesn't go back much past mid-2016. So we've got a request in with them for earlier data going back 10 years or so ago, so we can look at some of those bigger floods. The biggest one, of course, in 2008, but there were three or four others. And we can then look at and see what the gauge data was showing on those days. So hopefully we'll hear back from them on that. So far they've been very cooperative. And then once we get that, we'll go back and take another look at the little study we did is a part C of this document, which was to look at the rain gauge data and compare it to what the gauge 22 stream gauge was showing over here in Neiman Park, and just kind of see if there's any obvious correlation there. Number two, I guess this is kind of the punchline of the whole thing. If the city wants to pursue a warning system, really a lot of the components are in place. You know, the front end is already there. Your input data is going to come from rain gauges and stream gauge, possibly soil moisture. We haven't really looked at that. But those gauges are in place, and the telecommunications to get the data to a control center are in place because you can access it through the internet. So, you know, what remains then is a system to take that data in and process it. Some decision algorithms about when you are going to all go to issue and an alert, and all of that supporting system stuff. Basically, it's a system design. Basically, it's a system design problem. Additionally, we have other resources in place. There are a number of hydrological models that have been developed for this basin. Principal one being by the Army Corps, I suppose. I'll take Bob Chris's name in vain down here. I didn't know this when we started this, but I've subsequently learned that he's written a number of papers on predicting the behavior of small streams to intense storms and heavy rainfall. So we have some other resources there in our hands also, I think. So a lot of what we needed, maybe the expensive parts, at least in terms of hardware, are already in place. And the gauge 22 over here can actually measures every 5 minutes too. It doesn't report every 5 minutes, but it can be reprogrammed to, and that's something we could request. So a lot of the stuff we need is in place. Number three, if the city does decide to pursue this, it's probably more than can be done in-house because it's required a certain amount of expertise, but we'd recommend that they go to seek consultants or vendors or whatever that have specific experience in flash flood warning systems, because those are a very different thing than the usual river warning systems where things happen over several days. Flash flood is a matter of minutes. And I think that's a fairly specialized thing. A lot of it will be just figuring out how to integrate the data and get the system to work together. But then maybe the big thing is going to be to come up with some algorithm for actually looking at that data and predicting when to issue an alert. Because there's a real trade-off there. If you make the bar too low, you're going to send out a lot of false alarms. And if you get it wrong the other way, you're going to miss some things. I'm not sure it's going to be exactly obvious with all this data. And that's kind of where the type of stuff that Bob does, I think, comes into play, where you're designing a predictor to look at that input data and try to predict what the stream's going to do. So that turned out to be difficult. Bob, I took your name in vain. Do you have anything you want to add?
I'm glad to put in 2 cents. I have had a grad student download the available historical data on the Telog system, and I have everything from 2009 to mid-2016. And that's downloaded. Now, this is like in 60 Excel files currently, and each file is over 100,000 lines. That's how many 5-minute intervals you have in a year, is 100,000. So these are big files. I'll see the grad student tomorrow and see if we can't consolidate further, at least get annual reports. The next thing, just to, exactly as Eric mentioned, is to get those data indexed with the gauging data for the water levels and discharges here at Heeman Park, which is right at Purdue Road and Midland is where that gauge is. And then I do have a rainfall runoff algorithm where I can make predictions from the rainfall and to predict from that alone what the flows should be like and the stages should be like and compare them with the actual data, and with a very simple matter to get that calibrated. So there's plenty to do still, but as Eric said, there's a lot in place. Now, for an early warning system, I don't know of anybody that's really done this effectively for flash floods, small basins. For our larger streams, projections are made pretty routinely by the National Weather Service. For really small basins, they respond so quickly, you do need very short interval, like 5 minute or 15 minute precipitation data at the best, but you have to process it quickly. Because these storms can develop in just a, these flash floods can develop in a matter of an hour or less, mm-hmm. and they will propagate downstream as fast as somebody can run. The phenomenon of flash flooding is almost more like a avalanche, or maybe not that fast, but like a mud flow. Mm-hmm. And it will outrun you. They're fast, extremely dangerous flows. So one thing I think the city should also consider for not only doing it with a rainfall-driven bunch of algorithms, but another approach would be to expand the stream gauging network itself. There are stage sensors that are basically capacitance manometers that you can, they're actually kind of cheap, but we have to get these telemetered in. We only have one real site here right at Heeman Park, and that's downstream after everything's happened.
Mm. So you're thinking of something in
Well, we need some stuff upstream. We need it to be cheap, and the sensors themselves are cheap. They will record. They'll tell you all about it after it happened. But getting it telemetered in would be the trick, and that's
so
a hardware issue.
They're freestanding or free, just a unit that sets
some of these things are just little stuff you throw in the crack. I used to tie things to a brick or something.
Yeah.
One problem you always have is vandalism, especially the more conspicuous stuff is. It depends on the site. People don't necessarily leave that kind of equipment alone.
How would you propose telemetering at the end?
I have no idea that's a...
if we could do that type thing.
Well, just send the data to a... think of this. Think of having a little screen at the police station. You don't want to run a horn like the dang Weather Service. Every time there's a tornado within 50 miles of here, they wake up the whole city, so everybody ignores it and goes off all the time. We don't want to do that. I think, imagine a screen at the police station with some lights on it, and if it gets kind of high, the water levels, the lights are green to yellow to red, and pretty soon, you know, enough of them might light up that it'll wake people up there, and they might look around.
I want to go look at this.
Well, I think alerting the police would be the way to do it. I don't know. I think there's different possibilities. I should sometime meet probably with the subcommittee. I'd be happy to jack it up more. I think progress is being made, and there's plenty to do.
The response was one thing we did address in that April report, as well as the telemetering. If you couldn't get an internet tie-in, there's actually existing hardware and software that's used nationwide for this very purpose. It's called ASSET. I forget what it is. It's basically flood system used by a lot of municipalities, and they also have the telemeter equipment for like a UHF link, for instance, and it's reasonable price. Don't press me exactly, but I'm not talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars. But it's thousands, maybe $2,000-$3,000 for a site. So that would probably, an additional site or sites would probably be doable. Mm-hmm. It's been unfortunate, really.
That might be the best way.
Throwing a rock in with the sensor and get one of those UHF sites.
Is that for flash floods?
Just be in real time, way to do real time monitoring.
Yeah, the advantage with actual stream gauges, you know, you can try to run predictive models based on rainfall, but you always got an algorithm in between trying to sort it out, and get not only get the data, but process it, make a predictive model. The advantage with rainfall is maybe you have future rainfall estimates. But with just the stage sensors, things that tell you, gosh, the water here is this high. And if it gets to a certain level, on comes a green light. If it gets to a higher level, on comes a yellow light on that board. If it gets to a higher level, the light turns red. You can see the flash flood not only propagate, but you know how bad it is. And it's just, that's the answer you want. We don't really
validate, kind of trying to validate the what the algorithm said might happen.
Well, I mean, what the flood really is water level, and that's a way to really report that directly. You know, we can make all the elegant models in the world, and I'm quite interested in those things theoretically, but maybe that's not the way to solve the problem. Just get the information, there's a problem.
So we know historically where the flash floods have happened, and they typically happen again in those places time after time. What kind of monitoring do we do in those flash, or do we do anything in those areas that have experienced flash floods? I mean, I can tell you that when it's really raining and I'm concerned, I have some places that I head out to Mona immediately, mm-hmm. I go to Glenside, then I go to Shaftesbury. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a whole little trip that I make mm-hmm. because that's where the flooding happens. So what do we have in that area?
Nothing.
One of the things we recommended in that report is that, just aside from the warning system, that we ought to look at some data collection by doing exactly that, by having maybe some gauges, some level gauges, maybe even just simple staff gauges, you know, so that when a flood does occur, we've got some data about how the different areas are being affected, so we know if the hydrographic in the park is at a certain level, this is what it's doing in that neighborhood.
Well, the park is one thing, and occasionally it does flood and affects the apartment buildings, mm-hmm. but before I ever see that, I'm seeing the floods come off of Mona.
Yes.
Upstream.
Right.
Yes.
I'm seeing it go to Glenside. I'm seeing it then, you know, then I can count on it being in Shaftesbury. I mean, mm-hmm. I almost can't get around fast enough to see what's happening, but it happens quickly. So it seems to me like if we are going to put gauges someplace, you know, whether they're monitoring the flow or whether they're monitoring the rainfall, it has to be in those areas that tradition or historically have experienced flash flooding, as opposed to following the river to Pierre all the way down. It doesn't overflow its banks all the way down.
Well, it doesn't overflow, but the flows are high. Mm-hmm. That's a continuous move. It's like a flood. Flash flood's like a wave, mm-hmm. and it moves right down the channel. And just because it's not out of the banks doesn't mean that flow isn't high and you can't.
I understand that, but I'm mostly concerned. I mean, as you know, as a person who's dealing with another problem, I'm concerned about the people who are experiencing the flash flooding onto their property and into their house. If I'm getting a flood in the river and it's staying in the banks, I might be watching it, but I'm not
but
as concerned. Well,
the idea is you can tell if it's going to come out of the banks in certain places, if the stage, the phenomenon is very regular, and you could these sites can. The problem we currently have is the only gauging stations in Heman Park, and by the time it tells you there's a problem, everybody in the city's got a problem.
Well, it actually should be way upstream before
it
hits
Ward
3.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so have we got anything all the way upstream? I mean,
no, there's nothing there. That's what I'm saying these capacitance manometers would do for us. They're cheap. Telemetering them might not be cheap, but the devices themselves are cheap. And you put them all over the place. If you ask the USGS to do it, they want $10,000 a year to set up a station. And they want $10,000 a year, or no, $10,000 to establish a station and $10,000 a year to run it.
To support who?
So, you know, that's a Cadillac approach. They'll bankrupt us.
Who monitors, or who manages this one here?
It's the USGS. The MSD's actually fronting the bill, I think. But to have a whole network of these things.
What kind of a device is it? Is it capacitance, or is it?
They use pretty sophisticated stuff. They have, if you go to the bridge at Purdue, you can look at it.
Uh-huh.
You'll see a solar cell, which you can see. Because they don't want the power to go out.
Right.
And there's a little transmission, little radio transmitter. And then there's a little black box with a tube running down under the water. And they have some kind of pressure. I've heard the recent devices blow bubbles into the stream and acoustically measure that water velocity.
But to your point, Paul, absolutely yes. What the sensors Bob's talking about need to be upstream so we can see it coming.
But before it even hits University City, in my opinion.
Yes.
As far upstream as we can get it, yeah.
As far as upstream as we can get it.
And I think what he's talking about, it's pretty gross as far as, you know, as far as trying to measure height or anything like that.
They'll measure those things with better than a centimeter.
Really?
Now, to do with that accuracy, of course, your weather pressure variations are more than that.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about inches of mercury, and you get a few inches. So you have to really have a good one. But I don't think you need that level for flash floods. We're talking about feet. That deviation is not so important.
That's sort of what I was thinking. You want something that's, you know, tells you.
No, these pressure sensors are good. They're very accurate.
Well, I mean, I've seen, because I went out on the web, there's a lot of DIY, using ultrasonics and things like that. Just you just put a sensor looking down at the water, and you know how far you are off and what your elevation is. So therefore, you can start predicting from that what the surface of the water is at.
We don't even have to do DIY because all this asset stuff is available specifically for doing that.
Yeah.
All of that. So it's
it seemed like if you can find something simple that, if they are subject to problems with vandalism and things like that, you make them simple enough and people run the traps every once in a while and replace them.
Okay. Just one other piece of observation. Go along with what you say about by the time it gets to the gauge here, it's too late. This gauge comes up at the rate of 10 to 20 feet per hour. That's how quickly the flood develops from the time the gauge arrives to flood stage. So yes, unless we have something upstream to get that extra, I don't know how many minutes it is.
It's kind of a long time.
But between there and here, it's not much, but it's better than getting it here. If we get a few more minutes of time, further upstream, we could locate this thing. It might require some coordination at all events.
At flood stage, it'll probably be 12 to 15 feet per second propagation. At flood stage.
Propagation. Oh, okay. I get down the downstream. 12 to 15 feet per second, so it's about 8 miles an hour.
How much?
12 to 15
feet. No, you said miles per hour.
15 feet per second would be 2 miles an hour. So. But that's a little better than zero time.
Yeah,
you can close your windows and close doors and
get
stuff like that.
If you're me.
Get out the boat.
Yeah, get out your boat.
Are there any other comments concerning these reports?
Did you?
I was going to say we've gone through the entire list of committees. My observation is that we might want to start zooming in on maybe reorganizing the committees as the data comes in into aiming toward the completion.
Yes.
Like, are we going to make recommendations for ordinance changes? Are we going to make recommendations for early warning? Are we going to try to, identify the problems or categorize the problems or prioritize the problems based on the survey, and are we going to have subsequent site visits based on the survey. And I'm just thinking in terms of what we're going to report and maybe modify our committees to aim toward that point. And I don't know that we necessarily need to do it tonight, but
yeah.
We probably need to do it next, maybe by the February meeting.
Well, I think it makes a good aiming point, for lack of a better term, for next year's work. I mean, I think, frankly, to the extent that this is a summary of this year's work, we've done pretty good work. And I see things coming, you know, in a direction and really, in some ways, aiming toward a kind of conclusion that you're really hinting at. And I'm not hinting at, but you're saying. Because, I mean, we could say right now that we have a good deal of data. We have an ordinance that we're working on. We've done, you know, getting very good ideas for an early warning system. We've talked about funding and so on and so on. It seems to me that there is a clear direction we're coming. And maybe, following what you said, we need to refocus ourselves in some sense to bring all of this to a conclusion to present to the council. Nice work, nice reports. Shall we continue? We have any unfinished business. How about new business? We won't have a meeting in January. We will, however, have a meeting, obviously, in February. Any other unfinished business? Going once, going twice.
May I just ask a question?
Please.
So you're getting ready to put this kind of in a neat little package to be presented to council. So when we get it, at least to give them an update on what you've looked at, and maybe even predict where you're going next. So what do you think the time frame for that is?
Next year.
At any point you could stop and say, this is what we've been doing, and just, you know, just give them, you know, a very broad update. And it's not as though it has to be in a neat package, but I think at some point it would be a good idea. I was actually thinking, since we give little reports, the council does occasionally on the commissions and boards to which we liaise, that, that I might say something, but I think it might, because this is fairly technical and because you've exerted an enormous effort towards this, it seems like, a 5 or 10 minute presentation of the things that you have looked at and preliminarily what you have found might be something that you want to do as an interim update.
Yeah, not a bad idea.
Kind of where we want to go.
Where do you want to go? Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to control the output, but what I'm trying to do is say that, you know, you've been in existence for a while, and the council and the public really don't know, where you are or what you've been doing.
That's a good point.
As I see it, we'll end up getting the rest of the surveys in due date on January 4th. It's likely that it will take the next month to digest that, and maybe another month to go out and look in the field, or 2 months to go out and gather the data. So we're into late February, early March, just to understand the data we have. Then we have to bring it back to the committee to digest it among all of us. So that's probably going to be another couple of meetings for that. So I expect that we would be into June before we could report on the survey results and the field visits and other kinds of data. I think Eric is pretty far along. Eric and Bob are pretty far along on their early warning. So I would guess, put words in your mouth, but you guys could probably be finished in 3 months, however far we could go at this point, without actually setting it up yourself. and the ordinances mm-hmm. are fairly far along, but I would expect the ordinances, the recommendations connected with the ordinances may change after we analyze data and identify the problems. There may be some additions mm-hmm. or recognition that we don't have to address a particular issue. So the ordinances would come in about the same time as our final recommendations on the problems and the prioritization of the problems.
I would also
those are the three main focus that I see on this, but that's just my opinion.
I would also say with the ordinance that it's pretty close to completion in the sense of what we would add would probably be things that would essentially be one-line fixes. You know, to right. this, that.
I agree with you, but that we may want to look at
it could,
what
sure.
the problems are to make sure that the ordinance aligns with what we've identified
oh, sure, of course.
The problems rather than what,
yeah,
what
yeah.
we think the problems are now. It may be different after we fully analyze the data.
Paul, what, yeah. can you elaborate a little bit, Paul, on what form that would take? You said 10 minutes or something. That's an awful lot of it. Information to convey.
Yeah.
Where's the trade-off
so,
there
so
between
what
putting
I was,
people
yeah.
to sleep with detail versus being so cursory that you're not really transferring anything?
So we may want to have a study session with you, which wouldn't take any longer than an hour, but could take less than that. That would be one option to cover in detail. What I'm essentially going to do is to tell them about the topics that are currently being covered. And then, say that they're going to continue to work on it and hope to be back with some real answers sometime in June. But your presentation would be, it really depends on what you want. So if you wanted a 5 or 10 minute, you could talk about, for instance, you could talk about the early warning system, that one's farther along. That, you could even say we're in the process of looking at this and this. Without much elaboration, we're not to the point yet of really talking about the data and what the data suggests. So, am I correct? So, I think at that point, when you get down to that, then you'll be issuing some kind of a written report. But I think it's nice to to call attention to the work that you have done, and especially before June. When we consider the budget, so if there are issues that might need funding, even to a small extent, it'd be a good idea to know that ahead of time. And otherwise, I'll be saying to you, July 1st, gee, I'm sorry, we missed the budget.
Because it's at a very high level. It's not, and I know so many of you are engineers, it's not getting in there like that. It's a very high level. I understand what you're talking about.
Yeah. So, so basically, you're not to the point yet of presenting your data, and you probably don't have the audience, for that, but by the same token, letting people know the topics that you are looking at and maybe why. We wanted to take a look at early warning because it seems like we have no warning system. That kind of a thing. It's just the kind of thing that you do to let people know, certainly the council, but also put it in the record that this is what you are doing, and you're continuing to look at that. So it's some of us have to report like every 2 weeks.
Would it be beneficial for me to draft up a summary mm-hmm. of these things, pass it around to everybody, then we can develop a 5-minute mm-hmm. summary of work that
kind of end of the year report.
Or one of the chairmen could present at a meeting?
A kind of end of the year report?
But as Bob had pointed out, most of this will fly over people's heads. And you're not really doing it for that purpose. You're just letting people know that you are continuing the work and that broad brush, so that they have a sense of what you're looking at.
Many of us here Sure. Many of us here are also school teachers, so, I mean, if you can't put it in simple terms, you know, I mean, it seems that while a lot, I mean, these engineers and scientists that we have sitting around this table have made it clear to me what's going on, and if they can make it clear to me, it seems to me they can make it clear to the average citizen. I mean, that is our job, after all.
Okay,
how are we spending
your
money?
I withdraw my comment. However it's presented, but I do think that the council needs some kind of an update, even if it's not a comprehensive update at this point, just to let them know that the work is continuing and the general topics or that you are taking a look at.
Seems like the level you're saying really is almost that. It's just a list of topics we're working on with very little elaboration, really, because otherwise we'll bog down really quickly.
And so that's why in June, before the budget, and hopefully in June you'll have enough to present, we can schedule a study session or a portion of a study session so that you can make a more in-depth presentation, and then if you do have any budgetary needs, present those at the time. And and I don't know that you will or won't, but it would be a shame that if you suddenly decided you did on July 1st or 2nd. So I guess that's something to think about as you're...
How much of a lead time would you recommend?
Well, the way it's being planned now, Tim, is I think it's a two-month. We get a list from the city manager of his proposed topics for our study sessions, and we are now having them every single meeting. So there's a lot to cover, but it's a great idea to be looking at, well, at commissions and boards right now. That's what we're looking at. And in a sense, that's, that's this task force's. But nobody's asked yet, and the city manager he's looking at the established ones yet for evaluation. Are they following code? Are they, are they operating in the manner in which they were intended to operate? Are the appointments being done on time? I mean, those kinds of things that we need to know the operational. But this is actually... I think this would help us a lot. We just had a presentation from the Army Corps of Engineers representative on our application for the study. And so far we haven't been wiped away. Am I right, Chris?
That's correct.
We haven't been wiped away. And so to kind of be the other bookend to that is to let the council and others know, what this task force is doing, what you're taking a look at. And there may be questions. There may be questions that evening, probably not, if it's relatively short, but certainly during the study session there will be some questions.
Given the timeline that you're looking at, how about that we think about making a short presentation to the council in April and schedule a study session for May?
So if you do it in April, I would suggest that you you probably do it before the CNADA, which is the change, and it's because one of those seats is up for a special election.
Yes, of course.
Okay, so then I would say do it at the beginning of April.
So the first meeting in April.
There's always a little bit of confusion. But if it doesn't work out, then certainly, in May, but that puts it close. It's just a good practice to let people know what you're doing.
How we're spending their money, sure.
It's volunteer, I guess.
Yeah, well.
But there is interest in, in what what's happening. So.
Well, it gives us an opportunity to help develop that interest, maybe.
Yeah. So, does that seem reasonable that we try to make a presentation at the first meeting in April and then schedule a study session for May?
That's 2 months before your budget deadline.
Yeah, actually, by May 1st, the city manager has submitted his budget. This is the way it works, charter-wise. Has submitted his budget to the council, and then really can't change it again. Then the council has the opportunity to ask for changes or, to submit, other requests. And then we usually get are presentations by the various departments so that we can understand significance of the request they're making, and it must be passed by by June 23rd, or it reverts to the the submitted budget by the city manager.
I wonder if May is not close to that.
Yeah. What would you suggest, Paula?
Well, I think getting it in May is not a bad idea, even if it was the second meeting in May, because then that gives time, you know, if there is a budgetary consideration, that gives time to ask for it.
And I think that considering that we've got a lot of discussion around this new learning system, if we want to pursue something like that, we definitely would want to get it in this year's budget, otherwise we're looking at 2020 before we can even financially look at something like that. And I think that's something we want to get that and getting that to the council sooner than later.
That brings up an idea, Tim, that perhaps we may not have everything for the budget this year, but we can pick out what we've identified so far with a discussion that you're also looking at something that may be pertinent for the next year's budget.
Okay. And don't forget to sell yourselves. I mean, this is important to a lot of people, even though it doesn't seem like, a lot of people are responding. Remember, the flooding or the basement backups don't happen to everybody. So if the surveys coming back seem to be a small number, there are very many people in University City that do not experience flooding. So for them, it doesn't mean.
Which is good.
For them.
Right.
For those people who do.
Right. So are we sort of in agreement about this kind of timeline? That is to say that we want to get a short presentation to the council by the first meeting in April, and then we want to have a kind of study session, well, not a kind of, a study session at the second meeting in May?
We'll ask.
Is this a general agreement? I mean, I don't know if it needs a motion or anything, if we just sort of agree.
Could
do a
consensus.
There is a consensus. Is this something that actually
I
needs
would
a motion?
Consent.
You would consent. Okay. It has been generally agreed that there is a general consensus sort of about this, kind of generally. You know? Okay.
We have been advised.
We have been advised. So, new business. Is there any other new business to be considered? The committee will indulge me. I was writing today and I was about various things, and I thought I'd put down a few end of the year thoughts, if you give me about 30 seconds. That I was just sort of generally thinking about, you know, as we were kind of winding this down for the end of the year. So, and if you'll indulge me, I'm a writer, so I wrote it down. But I'd like to conclude tonight's meeting with a few year-end reflections. I keep thinking about Mother Teresa, where she said, "Not all of us can do great things, but we can all do small things with great love." More than anything else, I find myself near despair these days about the kind of country we are becoming. The treatment, for example, of undocumented folks is heartless. There is plenty of room to debate about immigration policy, but there is no room for heartlessness. And frankly, I would despair were it not for my neighbors. These days, my hope lies not in federal or state levels, but at the local level. My home, University City, is a small inner-ring suburb of St. Louis. I co-chair my town's stormwater task force. Our main project is to do research and formulate policies concerning flooding and stormwater. A tributary of the Mississippi runs through our house. The local stuff may seem like very tiny issues, but our mandate is a small love. Our primary task is to care for our neighbors. Our task is to care for Bobette, who lost her home due to river rise. We care that Bob's basement floods almost every time it rains. In other words, neighbors caring for neighbors. That's our salvation. Perhaps it's the only salvation there ever was. On a more personal note, I'd like to conclude this meeting by saying it's been an honor to serve you and to serve with you. And at that, I'll call for an adjournment.
Make that motion.
All those in favor? All those against? Never hear it.